because all the followers of Prabhupada were certain now in separation. If we don't learn this, we'll think that we have no contact with Prabhupada, and we'll think that there's no way to please him or to displease him. Sambhacharya. So, first we'll discuss the dynamics of service and separation according to Vaishnava philosophy, as Prabhupada taught it, and then how we may practice it and understand it. So, this involves the understanding of Bapu and Vani. You know what that is? Yes, we'll explain.
Vani is the spiritual master, understanding the instructions of Bapu through his own personal association.
Serving his body or serving him personally, being with others, serving by following his teachings. Right. So that Bapu, Vani is another way of saying service and separation. Of the two, the Vani is considered more important. Because the Bapu is sometimes available and sometimes not. That's its main defect. It's not basically inferior, except that it's not always available. Limited. And the other is always available. So we may raise a question that if the Vani is more important, we admit that the Vani may be more important, but isn't the Bapu needed first in order to make Vani work? I used to bring this up with my disciples. However, if this were true, that you needed Bapu to develop attachment so then you could serve the Guru in separation, know who you're serving in separation, then how are we going to ever have affection for Devani, for Prabhupada, if we can't get the Bapu? Well, it's not necessary that you have to first get the Bapu. Those who did have Bapu can tell others what it was like to personally serve this person. Those persons can then hear and remember and serve in Parampara. There are many devotees who never met Lord Chaitanya, but became greatly attached to serve him and had all ecstatic emotions. Like Krishnadas Kaviraj, Narottam Das Thakur, all the devotees up to the present day. So the same principle can work for Prabhupada. This principle of serving and separation, let's for the time, just for a little while, move away from understanding in terms of Prabhupada and understand it in terms also of our relationship with Krishna. And we'll see how important Vani is, or separation. Looking, for example, in the relationship of Krishna and the gopis, which is very prominent. When Krishna went to the forest with his cowherd boyfriends and cows, the gopis did not physically take part, but their hearts went with him. Because their hearts went, they were able to enjoy his company through strong feelings of separation. To acquire this strong feeling of separation is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and his direct disciplic succession of Goswamis. When we are not in physical contact with Krishna, we can associate with him like the gopis through feelings of separations. So why do I bring this up? We're talking basically about Prabhupada, not separation from Krishna, although we're interested in that also. But because the principle is the same, and we're trying to show that the path that we're following, Krishna consciousness, it stresses the importance of this. In other words, it's not just a way to make up for the loss of the person who's not here, but it's really the highest way to express and attain love of God, and for that matter, loving service of the spiritual master. That's why we're reading some of these selections about Krishna and the gopis. Another one. Why Krishna does this, that he is not always there with his devotees. Sometimes I do not reciprocate my devotees' feelings with me. It appears that my devotees are very much attached to me, but sometimes I do not reciprocate their feelings properly in order to increase their love for me more and more. If I can very easily be approached by them, they might think, Krishna is not so easily available. Krishna is so easily available. So sometimes I do not respond. If a person has no money, but after some time accumulates some wealth and then loses it, he will think of the lost property 24 hours a day. Similarly, in order to increase the love of my devotees, sometimes I appear to be lost to them, and instead of forgetting me, they feel the loving sentiments when they increase. And in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, spiritual separation is described there and how it's different from material separation. Prabhupada writes, pure love on the transcendental platform is a paragon of purity, devoid of material affection and completely spiritual. Affection for matter is perishable, as indicated by the inebriety of sex in the material world. The path of sense gratification causes material distress, but one cannot compare that with spiritual separation. Spiritual separation, there is neither inebriety nor ineffectiveness, as one finds with material separation. So, you don't forget, you go on serving in this mysterious relationship. It's more the principle of absence makes the heart grow fonder, and it's effective. The person is there by serving him in separation. Unlike material, if you can't be with somebody for sense gratification, then it's ineffective. You're not having a relationship. And usually you get somebody else to do it with. Vani is similar to other terms, like Vipralambha, Krishna Smaranam, Virapakash. These are all ecstatic feelings that are expressed by devotees in separation from the Lord. And again, they're the highest stage of loving relationships with Krishna, even greater than being with Krishna. Well, this Vipralambha is defined in the Krishna book. Lord Chaitanya taught people in general the method of Vipralambha, which is the method of rendering service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the feeling of separation. Six Goswamis also taught worship of Krishna in the feeling of the gopis in separation. Where is Krishna? The Goswamis said. Where are the gopis? Where are you, Srimati Radha? They never said, we have now seen Radha and Krishna, and therefore our mission is fulfilled. This is one of these things I don't think it exists in any other religious culture to the degree it exists in Krishna consciousness. The mood of separation and fulfillment in separation. In other words, we want nectar, and Krishna wants us to have nectar. So the devotees, the lovers of Krishna and Krishna, they have conceived that this is the greatest nectar that they can experience. As much as they like to be with each other and dance and do things together, when they're apart, you have a tired day. When they're apart, it's even more nectar because they're anticipating at any moment he may come back. But when he's there, he's there. Not that you ever get tired of being with Krishna, but still, he's there. And when he's not there, there's just always an anxiety, hoping, full of hope that he may come. It can be discussed, but it cannot be understood unless you're in it. Prabhupada expressed it in a poem that he wrote on the boat coming to America. He said, thinking of Krishna, he said, today that remembrance of you came to me in a very nice way. Because I have a great longing, I called to you. I am your eternal servant. Therefore, I desire your association so much. O Lord Krishna, except for you, there is no other means of success. So it's not only with Krishna and the gopis, but other great devotees also. So there's a good case with Arjuna. After Krishna left the planet, Arjuna was feeling very bereft and he lost his power. So he remembered the Vani again, and that's how he revived that. Oh, well, Krishna is gone, but his teachings are still with me. As the Prabhupada points out how he revived with that. He was grief-stricken at first. Arjuna, the celebrated friend of Lord Krishna, was grief-stricken because of his strong feelings of separation. So at first it made him very ineffectual. But then, now I am attracted to those instructions imparted to me by the personality of Godhead, Govinda, because they are impregnated with instructions for relieving the burning heart in all circumstances of time and space. So after the departure of the Lord from the vision of the earthly people, he wanted again to remember the great teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. So I hope that that background, a little, you all know this philosophy already, but the background of hearing about separation from Krishna, we keep in mind when we talk about this in relation to Prabhupada. But mainly we want to talk about it with Prabhupada. So, we're not talking only about Prabhupada since his disappearance. As soon as he came upon the scene, he began to teach about serving and separation. And we understood what it meant in New York when he left, and we had to deal with it, meaning he's gone to another place. Then you have to serve in separation. So the very first letter that Prabhupada sent back to the devotees in New York, in which he listed all their names, wasn't just addressed to one person. When he first reached San Francisco, he had heard that we were suffering without him. And you can imagine devotees with such fledglings, only a few months as devotees and left to run a center. The question could be asked, well, I don't know if we want to run this center or not. Now that he's not here, it's his center. But we did want to run it, but we did feel that it was very difficult without him. So he wrote back, my dear Brahmananda Hayagriva Kirtananda Sasarupa Gargamuni Chutananda Jyotirani, I understand that you are feeling my absence. Krishna will give you strength. Physical presence is immaterial. Presence of the transcendental sound received from the spiritual master should be the guidance of life. That will make our spiritual life successful. If you feel very strongly about my absence, you may place my pictures on my sitting places, and this will be sources of inspiration for you. So the letter helped very much, and I mentioned here that Brahmananda posted it in the storefront. Now Swamiji had clearly enunciated that we were still with him. He was still in New York with us. It was something special. Service to the spiritual master in separation. And even the devotees in San Francisco who were with Swamiji every day could not yet know of its special taste. While the devotees in New York performed their daily duties, they often quoted from the letter and thought about it. Krishna will give you strength. Physical presence is immaterial. Presence of the transcendental sound received from the spiritual master to be the guidance of life. Brahmananda, as president of the New York Temple, frequently phoned San Francisco. The chanting is the focal point, he told Hayagriva. We can always sit and chant. We're beginning to understand what Swamiji meant when he said that worship and separation is more relishable. Of course, there were letters going on back and forth, but that was the first taste we had of separation. And Prabhupada was always traveling, so he was often away. But he would tell us, he used this phrase, that we're all packed up together. If you're there and I'm here, if we're both chanting, by the sound vibration, by your service, we're packed up. And although this is a very exalted stage that we're reading about Krishna and the gopis, and usually devotees honestly admit that, well, I don't really have any experience of this spiritual state or that spiritual state, I think devotees will honestly say that they do experience something called service and separation. And we did. And in the beginning, it was a very strong thing right away, that although he wasn't there, by serving his order, you felt his presence. And, you know, attest to that actually being a reality. So, then I have a couple of letters. I'm hoping to research more, because Prabhupada wrote of this often. Because disciples, they would feel sorry, and write, why don't you come to our center, or I'm feeling weak without you. And he would preach this doctrine. Here's a letter from 1969. Our meeting and separation in the material world is like the flowing tide of the river. During the flowing tide of the river, so many different floating articles meet together, and with the flowing they again become separated by the movement of the waves. That is exactly the way of material life. But our separation, although it resembles exactly the material way, is completely different. In the spiritual world, separation is more relishable than meeting. In other words, in spiritual life there is no separation. Separation is eternal, and meeting is also eternal. Separation is simply another feature of meeting. I have to really think about that before you can understand that. But there is no separation. No complete cut-off, no forgetfulness. And another one from 1970. Thank you very much, and all the devotees, for offering me a garland daily, as you were doing when I was physically present. He's thanking them that they're offering a garland to his picture. If a disciple is constantly engaged in carrying out the instructions of his spiritual master, he is supposed to be constantly in company with his spiritual master. But Prabhupada takes it that, thank you, that he's receiving it, or that they're actually giving it to him, even though he's not there. This is called Vani Seva. And then he explains what the two are. He gives exact definitions. Vani means, quote, executing the instruction. And Vapuseva means physically, personally rendering service. So in the absence of physical presentation of the spiritual master, the Vani Seva is more important. And Prabhupada knew about this because that was his mood as a disciple. We're often pointing out, Madhava often points out, how Prabhupada is that he was motivated to serve his spiritual master. That's true. And the nature of that was the Vani, because he said he only met his spiritual master around 12 times or so. No more than that, he said. And although they lived on this, they lived together on the planet for, you know, a good number of years, 15 years or so, more. Let's say Prabhupada met him in 1920, and then he left 1936 or something. But they didn't meet much. And then after that, so long, Prabhupada's career was decades and decades, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, all in separation. And he was so lively about his separation from his spiritual master, always knowing that he's present. Oh, when Prabhupada was on his way to India in 1967, Brahmananda was crying, and Prabhupada patted him on the back. I can understand that you are feeling separation, he said. I'm feeling for my Guru Maharaj also. Now I want to discuss something a little subtle, you can call it esoteric, but it is important, and every thoughtful devotee will bring this up at some point, that in what sense is Prabhupada actually present? now that he's not here? Is it just like you follow the teachings that he left behind, but he's not really here? Or if he's really here, how is he present? Is he present in the heart like the super soul is present, or what? So, one explanation is that as the Lord is in the heart, the pure devotee is in the heart. I'll give you a little evidence that that's true. One is from the Nectar of Devotion. When Prabhupada describes in the introduction what Krishna is, he says, Krishna can include many different expansions, as well as his pure devotees. In the Brahma Samhita it is stated, and I'll start again, Krishna includes all his expansions as well as his pure devotees. So when you say Krishna, it means he's not alone. Krishna's there with his pure devotees. Krishna, the word, quote, Krishna, unquote, does not mean just Krishna alone. He is always with his associates and paraphernalia. And then more directly, the complete statement in the concluding words, which we turn to so many times for so much important information, although it's a short thing, it's got a lot in it. He says, I think that His Divine Grace, Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, is always seeing my activities and guiding me within my heart by His words. As it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Teni Brahma Vida Yadi Kavaye, spiritual information comes from within the heart, wherein the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His Paramatma feature is always sitting with all His devotees and associates. So, all I can do is rephrase what he just said there, or repeat. As you can communicate with the Lord in the heart, so with the Lord is the devotee. We read from that ninth canto statement last night where the Lord says, I am always in the devotee's heart, and the devotee is always in my heart. And therefore it was stated that when his devotee was hurt, when Ambarish was hurt, it caused pain to Krishna, because the devotee is in the heart of Krishna. So they're together. And therefore we are able to communicate or be in the presence of our spiritual master in separation, just as we're face to face with him otherwise. Another way to understand this is the oneness of the Chaita Guru and the spiritual master, Diksha and Shiksha. We have some statement about that in the purport. When one becomes serious to follow the mission of the spiritual master, his resolution is tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means meeting the Personality of Godhead in the instruction of the spiritual master. So when you follow the vani of your guru, you attain the association of Krishna. This is called vani seva. One should serve the words of the spiritual master. The disciple must stick to whatever the spiritual master orders, and simply by following that line, one meets the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Somehow or other, if he sticks to the principle enunciated by the spiritual master, he's in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, the question is asked here, well, why doesn't Krishna just appear in his original form? And the answer is that unless you're very highly elevated and loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you can't see him as he is. But he comes as the Guru, and if you serve the Guru, whether he's there or apart, then you're in Krishna's association. Don't ask, I want to see Krishna. But just serve, and Krishna will see you. Since the Lord is in the heart, he can advise a sincere disciple from within. So I'm making the point that the instruction that Krishna speaks to you from within the heart, it's not wrong to say that that also means the Guru. When we say that, it also means the Guru from within the heart can instruct you. Because we've read that. I just read 3 or 4 evidences that he's in the heart along with Krishna, and that he's not different than the Chaita Guru. The two of them are there. Normally, the Guru, we say he's like outside, and the Lord is inside. But then when the guru leaves, then he's inside also, through the vani. Prabhupada trained us in separation while he was present, but then he left. So at the time when he actually left, that was a very traumatic time for the devotees. Even now, devotees join this movement and they lament that I never met Prabhupada. So that means that it was traumatic for them too, that they came after he left. Those who were there when Prabhupada left, they immediately felt the pain that he was there and now he's not there. And there's a lot of grief and loss of spiritual ability. I've described this in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, and also how that if we were fortunate enough or sincere enough, we felt the pain, but at the same time we immediately felt that he's still with us. Prabhupada's followers knew the principle of service and separation, known as Vipralamba, but to most devotees it was a theoretical realization. But when Prabhupada actually left the world and left the disciples to carry on the mission, they immediately realized union with him and separation. He was gone, but he was still very much present. This realization was not a pretension or a myth, nor was it sentimental, psychic phenomena, telepathy, communication with the dead, or so on. It was a completely substantive, practical, palpable reality, a fact of life. Srila Prabhupada had given them personal service, and now they would continue that service. So, of course, it's unfortunate that many disciples have left, but they attributed that to other reasons, that they couldn't get along with their godbrothers or the movement. But at least those who continue, they continue on the strength of the fact of him being present in the seva. Service and separation was undoubtedly a fact. Otherwise, now that they were without his personal presence, how were they able to sustain themselves in spiritual life? The fact that they could continue as before increased their feelings of devotion and even increased their serving capacity meant that Prabhupada was very much still with them. As Prabhupada's last instruction was the lesson of how a human being should die, he now taught, beyond dying, how to practically implement the highest philosophical teachings of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And those who didn't learn this, who only knew Bapu, then they went away. I'm going to insert a question here now, which I think will be of interest to you. How can the grand disciples relate personally to Srila Prabhupada and think of pleasing him, although they never knew him, and he never knew them? And how do they approach through their own spiritual master who inspires them in their relationship with Srila Prabhupada? Want to turn that into a group question? Anybody like to try to answer that?
I think in the atmosphere, Prabhupada lives in sound vibration. Like in Smaranam, there's so much remembrance of Prabhupada that if you never even met him,
yeah,
then you know him, just like the analogy is given of a person who's in love with someone. They tell you about the person all the time, and you can begin like that. So Prabhupada, you hear so much about him, and then we can see him. We see him in all the program, everything that he taught. Mm-hmm. It's all here.
Yeah.
So when they ask us things, we know that it came from Prabhupada.
Yeah.
It's like if your grandfather gave you so many gifts, you know,
yeah,
the house you live in, you know, of a worship. See, that's the way I say that we can remember it.
And you know, the thing that's missing, if someone says, yeah, but because you didn't know him, there's something missing. A disciple of mine wrote, she said, honestly, one thing I have to express to you, I don't know whether it's wrong to say this or not, but I really wish that I could have met Prabhupada, and I wonder if sometime, if it's possible that I will meet him. It's going on and on like that. And I said, yes, it's possible that you could meet him. And I said, and I'll tell you what it's going to be, what it'll be like. I said, you, when you meet him, you're going to think, oh, I already know him. That's what it'll be like. Although it won't be disappointing, oh, I already know him. It'll be very wonderful. But just like you're saying, it's not that you don't know him. It's going to be, oh, here's a person that I know very well. I'm so glad to meet him. So we can guarantee that the experience will be like that.
And your other question is, how could you pray to him through your spiritual master?
Well, I didn't say, use the word pray. I'm going to bring that up later. But I used the word approach.
I see that too like a family thing, because he's my grand spiritual master. He's our grand spiritual master. So because our spiritual master is always teaching us about approaching him, then just like whenever I'm in trouble or if something's too heavy, then I ask Prabhupada to help me, you know. I usually do it through prayer, but I approach him because he's just there.
But that wasn't my question. That's another good question. It's a question that you've been concerned with and others have brought up. I'll ask you, Madhu. How do they... Well, what's the need for another spiritual master then? If Prabhupada is so nicely present in all the different ISKCON functions and facilities, and you could pray to him and this and that, then what's the function of the guru for the grand disciples?
Well, the answer first of all, that Prabhupada, like, not to take away that Prabhupada is present in the, like say in his books, he said that he's present in his books. But at the same time, in those same books, he's also said that there is a need for a personality. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's one reference where he says that a book knowledge isn't sufficient. You have to have guidance. You have to have personal guidance by the spiritual master.
Okay. Does that mean that Prabhupada is not the spiritual master but grand disciple?
Well, he's... It's easier for me to relate to it in my personal experience is that, I've said it before, you know, I joined when Prabhupada was on the planet, but I never, and then he left, and I was always really lamenting that, feeling that I owed him a debt, but I never got to really serve him. But then when you started engaging me in service, especially on the Leelamrita, because it was such an obvious direct connection, and you gave that service to me, then that fulfilled that debt, and it kind of, you know.
And I'll ask what you're saying is a good answer, but I'll ask it again for a direct answer. Is he spiritual master for grand disciples?
He's a spiritual master. He's a... Not directly, you have your own spiritual master. So Shiksha, or at least...
Shiksha Guru.
But, a spiritual master, no.
Not the only spiritual
master. Not the spiritual master.
Or, I'm thinking about that. He is a spiritual master for us. Does it mean that he has to be the most prominent spiritual master?
I think it's, not only think, but it's a fact, that individuals have different ways to be that.
Yeah. That's why I said it doesn't have to be the most prominent.
No, it doesn't have to.
You know?
The whole thing is supposed to be voluntary. If somebody says, yes, it has to be, because... He is so much he is infinitely superior to any other, to his own disciples, so he has to be the most prominent. It doesn't have to be. They can say, well, as much as I hear about him and I know he's the greatest, I need a connection to him, and he seems far away. And so somebody else, you just can't shout at that person and say, no, he's not far away from you, you don't need anybody else. Look, I do, and I've got a connection, and it's connecting me to Prabhupada, and the person who does, he's... So you can't... Neither can you take the grand disciple who's saying, you know, I hope it's not offensive, but I feel my main connection is with Prabhupada, but I wish to render all proper service and etiquette and respect to my spiritual man. So, provided they're all within bounds, they're both valid.
It's almost like when the question comes up, it's hard to even say. Almost like embarrassing to choose or something.
Yeah, right. Somebody was telling me, just to show an example of that the greatest one doesn't have to be the most prominent. Let's see, it was Narottam who accepted Lokanath Maharaj as his guru. Who was telling me this just recently? Oh, it was Murli Bhanaka. And so he approached this. I think it was Lokanath. Somebody approached Lokanath, and he said, no, there's no question of serving me. While Jiva Goswami is on the planet, you should approach him. But this person, I think it was Narottam, you know the story, yeah? He wanted Lokanath Maharaj as his guru. So that, and so then he used to hide and do service when Lokanath Maharaj didn't know it. And then Lokanath hid on him. And caught him. He said, why are you doing this service? I don't want anybody to serve me. And you should serve Jiva Goswami. And then he said, you know, I can't help it. You're my guru, and that's all. And then Lokanath said, all right. So, Narottam Das Thakur had that conviction. Okay, we'll go on. Yeah.
Well, another, this one is the deity worship. This one.
Ah.
One strong.
Right. Service and separation?
Yeah. You know, for the grand disciple.
Oh, yeah. Know. Yeah, yeah.
I know, I feel that a lot. But others do too. A lot of grand disciples take care of the prophet, the deity, and the temple.
Yeah.
They do everything. Disciples left, you know. So.
Yeah, it's sort of like significant. They left, and so the others approached Prabhupada.
Yeah, I was like, well, somebody's got to take care of Prabhupada. Mm. Here he's here.
One time we weren't allowed to touch him, practically.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't allowed to leave the Guru Pooj. That's why that Bhadra left. Oh, let's go on. How, therefore, they have direct relationship with Srila Prabhupada, and it's not jumping over. That we discussed. I have some realizations in the Prabhupada Nectar, but I don't think I'll leave them. Let's just get into some... they're good, but I just want to keep up the attention as far as possible. The group discussion may be better. Here's a question. Isn't it true that in service and separation, an important element is missing? Namely, the ability of Srila Prabhupada to correct us personally. Wasn't this proved by the fact that his followers made so many mistakes after his disappearance, which they wouldn't have made if he were present? So this question is like a doubt after all the glorification of service and separation. We're saying, well, no, there's something so important that's missing when he's not here. And so this evidence is given that without him here, correct. So many things go off. Yes?
He's left plenty of corrective advice if you don't take it.
Yeah. I think that thing, if we want to admit it, that there is such a thing, something that's missing, it makes it, you have to be stricter and more attentive in order to get his corrective instruction. But it's still there, so it's missing in the
the way that the swiftness of his correction could come down upon you. Although even when he was present, people managed to disobey, but get into trouble and do all the same. I mean, so the same kind of things were going on. You know, GBC men falling down, people getting puffed up, thinking they were more elevated than they were, people being worshipped as guru. That was going on even when he was here among his disciples. But if you say there's something left, and it was that ability to correct things more directly, that's still there, but you have to work harder for it. That's how I would answer that. There's more of a responsibility now on his followers not to drift away. Before you could be like, just like a naughty child, he just plays and plays and plays, and there's some of those cartoons about children, that, you know, one of the children turns to the other in the midst of their creating havoc, and they say, you know, I wish the grown-ups would come and stop us. So you know, when are they going to come and stop us? So we could act like that, and then Prabhupada would come in and say, what are you doing? Be quiet, sit down, you do that, you do that. No, you can't be guru. But now you have to not be just naughty children and throwing the toilet paper and flushing it down the toilet and, you know, taking the toothpaste out and putting it all over. You can't do that stuff. You have to behave, because you can't say, you know, when are the grown-ups going to come? You have to be grown-up yourself. There is another question. Is it so necessary to personalize the vani so much? If service and separation means to follow the teachings, can't we just do it? That is, hear about Krishna and serve, without cultivating so much personal relationship with Prabhupada. Is the personalized service artificial? Vani means service.
That's turning towards the line of argument would be like impersonal philosophy. But our argument is that before you serve someone, you have to have some idea of who it is you're serving. So we want to know who we're serving, and that will give us further impetus then to serve that person even more. The more we get to know them.
Yeah, you can't be impersonal. And it's not our concoction, it's the philosophy is a very personal philosophy that you have Guru Pooj and that you worship him and hear about him. It's not our idea to personalize it. And it's neither is it say overdone or done in the sense of just for his personality, which would be the case, say, in one of these gurus who doesn't represent a parampara, but you know, Guru Maharaj Ji or something like that. These people who come without any parampara, then that personalized following is they're all being misled. Then. Formerly, I had two subjects which I thought could be a whole lecture by themselves, but when I thought about it, I realized they couldn't. One was prayers to Prabhupada, and one was dreams. So now I've got them here as questions for group discussion. What is the role of making prayers? You were going to talk about that? Prabhupada. What is it?
Well, I think for making prayers to Srila Prabhupada, it's basically inspired, or if there's some appreciation, then spontaneously, just like we pray to Krishna, spontaneously there may be some appreciation. So we pray to Prabhupada like that, in thanks and appreciation. And the other way is like a child who needs the protection of his grandfather, you know, like that.
In the previous discussion tonight, I already established that how it can, with the that he's listening, and that it's possible that he's in the heart with the Guru, with the Lord. So that's how it works, so to speak. But your answers are good. And when you said inspired, I thought of the other side of it, that in a routine way also, we pray at daily Guru Puja. That's a prayer. Sri Guru, Charana, Padma, and the different, there's prayers to Prabhupada, Pranam, prayers, things like that. They're also made. And so, just as you pray to Krishna, you pray to Prabhupada. Madhava and I had a discussion once when I was in Ireland about praying, and I said, sometimes I pray to Krishna, and I think, who might have prayed to Krishna? And then I pray to Prabhupada, but I think, well, I'd like to pray to God, too. And I think Prabhupada would want me to pray to Krishna. So, one or the other. And then I started praying to both. I even wrote that in the Entering Life of Prayer. So, I pray to both.
Just on that point, there's one prayer which kind of seems like natural, is that we're praying to, or I'm praying to be engaged in Krishna service, and I pray to Guru Maharaj, please help me to be engaged in Krishna service. Srila Prabhupada helped me, but then also there's a prayer I like to think that I'm praying to Srila Prabhupada, for him to help me to engage in your service, in my spiritual master's service. But he's like we talk about the grandfather. Didn't Prabhupada make some reference to the grandfather as more merciful to his grandchildren?
Yeah.
So how is that reciprocation of mercy there? Isn't it proper, or isn't it possible for the grandchild to approach the grandfather?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, you know. So, so it seems like a natural prayer.
Yeah.
To make two Prabhupada for us, it's great.
Yeah, it's a family example, is nice. I have a memory, saying it's great or something, but I'm just sharing it with you, a memory of being in 26 Second Avenue. I think, I wasn't even initiated, but it was one of the first meetings, and I was very impressed with Prabhupada. He seemed like such a rare person in the world. And I can remember the meeting being over and being ready to get up and go, and I made a little prayer to God, as much as I knew, that something like, this is such a great person, I just pray that you protect him so that he can stay in this world. And so you can pray to, you were saying you can pray to the grand guru to help you serve the guru. You can also pray to the original guru, Krishna, to help you serve your guru, or to protect your guru. Krishna would like a prayer like that too. We used to pray to Krishna for the health of Srila Prabhupada. We pray to Krishna to help you serve pure devotees. You say, my dear Lord Krishna, I know I can't approach you directly. I'm supposed to approach my spiritual master, but you please help me do that. Because you can do it.
It's kind of encouraging also to hear you talk about prayer to Krishna. Because when we pray, I mean, the deity's there, how much do we know the deity? But if it's all right, if we pray to the deity, then we can see that's like our way of praying right to Krishna. We know he's there helping us, you know.
Yeah.
We get some realization.
Yeah, we go before him.
Yeah.
How can you say you're not supposed to pray to him? Why do we have the deity there? So much trouble to have the deity there, but to pray to him and worship him. And then I have a final group question. What about dreams? Are they valid? Dreams of Prabhupada, for Prabhupada appreciation. Think of any references or discussion about that? Of course, right away we think of dreams of Prabhupada had of his spiritual master. That's a kind of evidence that he took it seriously. But as far as Prabhupada, certainly it's a phenomena that many devotees talk about, that they do have dreams that give them solace and things like that. And, you know, I didn't know whether I had any connection with Prabhupada, and one day I dreamed that he looked at me and he said, yes, I'm pleased with you. So many varieties of dreams like that, that it seems to have some validity, but of course it doesn't stand on its own. That's the danger. I had a dream, and it has to coincide with Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. But although you have Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, they may not confirm to you, you know, in that way that a dream does, that Prabhupada knows I'm here, and that especially grand disciples, they get satisfaction when they have a dream, and then they feel, oh, I have some connection, Prabhupada recognized me, or something like that. I've written in that, calling out to Prabhupada what dreams are, and how Prabhupada said that the dream of the spiritual master was not an ordinary dream, so they have some validity.
So, personally, it's a little hard for me to relate to dreams in that, because I don't have so many, or I haven't ever had so many.
You may and you don't remember them, that's another possibility.
That could be. But I think of it, how it does affect me is more like a daydream or something, something along the lines of thinking, feeling, willing, where I'll think, or be thinking about, like, it's not like at night, but, just thinking ahead, and then those things happen, that kind of thing, which in itself confirms a dream, or confirms that, if you remember. It was like scenarios.
Yeah. I guess daydream is a good word for it.
Yeah.
A reverie. It's not exactly analytical thinking, but it's just like a dream.
But it's almost like confirmation of the experience is when it happens.
Yeah.
As you were
thought
about it maybe even years ago in this particular set of events or whatever.
Maybe that's the form of dreams that you recall. If someone would want to discount this whole subject, I think it only could be discounted as on a level that we're too neophyte to have genuine dreams of the pure devotee. But that it occurs on the higher level of devotional service, or that you can just start reading Chaitanya Charitamrita a little more closely and you see dreams all the time. He had in a dream the deity came to him, in a dream. Is I always think, and it's just taken as almost all visions. They seem to occur when somebody lightly dozes or he goes to sleep, and then Gopal comes, or Kshira Gopinath comes, or Lord Chaitanya comes, or Lord Jagannath comes and slaps him. And so, if there's a question that it's not valid, it may be not valid for us, but it's described a lot in the literature. But those dreams, they're more like occasions the Lord takes to appear to the devotee, so that when it's over, the devotee's sometimes not quite sure whether it really happened or not. And maybe that's how Krishna wanted it to be. Other times Krishna appears very directly in a darshan to Dhruva Maharaj or something. Sometimes in a dream. I won't dwell on this, but I just thought I'd bring it up at the end as a question. Some people will have more experience of it than others. And so there are some devotees who they attach such importance to it that it's a little frightening to me, but they rely on it. I know one devotee, and he relies on it for like major decisions and doesn't listen to anybody else. I just can't relate to that level of importance.
But as you said in the beginning, it makes the devotees feel that they have, especially the younger ones, they feel they have personal contact.
Yeah.
And it encourages you, especially if it does go in line with Sadhu and Shastra. Or you told me one time, if there's good instruction, if it's Krishna conscious instruction.
Yeah. I mean, if you see Prabhupada in a business suit, and I say, oh, wait a minute, this is just my crazy mind. Putting things together in the wrong order. So that's the nonsense. But when it's right in order, then you can't say, well, most of the time I just dream nonsense, so why should I accept this one? Well, if at least out of all the nonsense, then there's something that's in line, I reject it. Be grateful you got something, some pure moment. You were dreaming that you were making puris and things for Prabhupada?
Mm-hmm. I used to dream about a lot, even before I became initiated. I think sometimes the dreams have something to do with us, like on a subconscious, not so conscious level, because I was thinking, well, what will I do now that Prabhupada's not here? And I fooled around all that time and I didn't move into the temple. So what am I going to do now, you know? And so then, before I became moved into the temple, he kind of helped me through dreams to, you know, make different decisions. And I did.
That's an undeniable good influence. Well, I'm finished. Oh, time is finished too. Maybe we can take a couple minutes and write impressions of the class on service to separation. I didn't specifically ask for any group questions, but if you've got any, you can put them down too.